Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Beach Lifestyle Show on the Total Education Network, powered by the Simply G Media Network. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, and also SimplyG.com. And I want to welcome my co-host to the show. And I know when I told you we're going to have this guest, you were really excited to be here. GJ, how are you, G?
I'm doing fantastic. I am excited. And my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, was really excited when she found out who I was interviewing because she is a true fan. And unlike the person we interviewed yesterday, I hadn't seen their movie. I've seen the movie about our guest's life. Very powerful story, very inspiring. And, you know, her story is really unique. You know, she was a surfer. And she's out surfing, and, you know, one of the biggest fears most people have when they go in the water is the fear of a shark. And I've actually surfed one time in Hawaii on the big island of Kona, and I was fearful of the sharks and the Vana. And unfortunately, neither one of them got me. And, you know, so our guest, she's from Hawaii. She was out there surfing at the age of 13, and a big 14-foot tiger shark got a hold of her. And, you know, so we'll hear a little more about her story. But please welcome to the show, Bethany. How are you doing, Bethany Hamilton?
Aloha. Thank you for having me.
Oh, Bethany, we're really excited to have you on the show. And to start out, always, because we know for sure that surfing is something that it's a passion of yours for sure in so many ways. But growing up, did you always want to be a surfer growing up in your life?
I did. You know, my whole family surfed, and I got the bug for surfing when I was like 5 years old and just grew up going to the beach every day and really catching on to surfing and riding waves. And yeah, I just had that drive even at a young age to, like, I wanted to be the best surfer in the world. And I had the support of my family, and yeah, it was just an awesome thing to start so young and have that passion and drive.
Definitely. And GJ and I always talk about passion and drive when it comes to success in whatever field you go at. And it's great, G, that she had that focus from the beginning.
Right. You know, most people, you know, they take sometimes well into their adulthood before they find their purpose and their passion. And Bethany found it at a very young age. And then at age 13, you know, she's pursuing her passion. And unfortunately, you know, a tragic accident happened. But, as more of I've seen about her story and read about you and, you know, with the book and the movie Soul Surfer, you know, the more I look at it, I said, it's really God's blessing. And I said, look how many people you've been able to touch. Look at how many people you've been able to inspire. You're very purposeful, and you're very clear about who you are and your mission and the impact that you're having. And you know, being one of the top surfers in the world and probably being one of the most recognized surfers in the world, you're being able to live that passion, that purpose.
Exactly. And feel really blessed. And I don't look at the shark attack and think, why me? I look and just see all the good that's come out of it and how good God has been to me. And now just being able to be a role model for many young girls and just a reminder for people in general that we don't have to let setbacks keep us from thriving and doing well in life.
And that's so key that to be able to take these setbacks and move forward and to constantly look at, hey, this is the opportunity that has presented myself, but I'm never going to give up. But once you were attacked by the shark, did you believe you were recover right when it happened? How did you kind of overcome through those obstacles, especially for our listeners out there that don't know your story very well, but really it's a tremendous story.
You know, when I recovering in the hospital, I definitely wasn't super confident in I didn't know what life was going to hold, and I was scared and just like nervous to lose surfing. And but I definitely just had a piece that, you know, I was gonna make the most of it. And I mean, within a few days, I was already smiling and back to my bubbly self. And then I had the pleasure of talking with a good friend who had lost his leg to a shark a few years before myself, and he actually learned how to surf with one leg after he had lost his leg. So that was my first hint of inspiration, like, wow, maybe I can surf with one arm.
And that's the story, and that's how things, and that's how you became a role model. And GJ, again, I didn't know this, what you shared about your daughter and how she's such a big fan of Bethany. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, she has to go to bed at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. every night, and she's begging to stay up. And obviously, she's got a couple more days of school before the Christmas break. And I mean, there's many times her and her neighbor friend are standing, you know, acting like they're standing on a surfboard and surfing and just that inspiration. And every time she's watched that movie, that compassion comes out. And it's been such a great story for just to see it firsthand with my own daughter, how it's been inspirational. And it's also showing, like, no matter what the circumstances, you're able to overcome it. And, you know, so that message has been loud and clear right here in my own home. And
you know, one thing I learned in all that my family and I went through is each of us are different, and we take our different circumstances and approach them so differently. And I don't think there's a right and a wrong. I think there's sometimes a better approach, but I think we have to, you know, like for my dad, for example, he was really angry and upset at God, and it took him a long time to heal and accept what had happened to his daughter. And as he saw me just being so stoking on life and starting to surf with one arm, eventually he forgave and was able to move on, and he's become one of my greatest supporters and just so thankful for my dad. But I think all of us, it just takes healing and finding passion again and getting back to what we love and working towards that.
And speaking of, again, women and, I guess, and girls and how much of a great role model you are, it must make you really happy to be teaming up with Tampax, especially with the Actively brand and everything, and being involved with them must make you feel really good to be able to be a great role model for.
Yeah, everything. No, it's been really awesome. At first I was like, teaming up with Tampax, that's a little funny. But then I was like, you know what, it's totally suits me, because I remember when I was a young girl and I'm going from a girl and turning into a woman, and you have your body and you're changing, and it's kind of intimidating. And it's awesome to be able to remind girls that, you know, to embrace being a girl and a woman and still get out there and stay active and healthy. And so it's been really fun, and I love the brand. And it's kind of funny talking about it with guys, but us girls, we and you guys, it sounds like you have a little girl that's eventually gonna need her dad to go pick up some tampons.
Well, I'm gonna have more than a few girls. I have in my household 3 girls, it'll be interesting, especially when that does happen, for sure. And I'm sure GJ will never let me down on that one, especially with me asking the question. But again, I'm the one looking at it and say, "Oh, this is a perfect situation." But what I think that the key thing, and especially speaking also to Kerry Walsh Jennings about the same thing with the teaming up with them, is again that it's okay for girls to be active, that they shouldn't stop themselves in specific things, and to live an active lifestyle. And that's something you definitely are a big advocate of being out there healthy and active at all times, right? Especially for
yeah, opportunity. I always just do so much better in my day. I love starting my day with exercise. Like, it just kickstarts my day, and I feel like I can get a lot more done. And especially as a professional athlete, like, just learning your own body and how to best fuel yourself and take care of yourself, and then adding a whole other element of travel and just adjusting to being on the road and eating the right foods and getting enough water. And yeah, I love just learning more and more about that and sharing that with other people, especially young girls, and just encouraging them to, you know, don't go home from school and watch TV. Get outside and get active. And it's been fun with Tempex. You can go to their Facebook page and check out all the awesomely active thing girls are doing. And actually, I'm going to be taking over their Instagram tomorrow, so that will be fun. Show all the girls what I like to do to stay active, aside from just surfing.
Well, and it seems like, especially you have that scene of Hawaii. There's a lot of ways, and GJ's traveled Hawaii many times, right, G? So there's a lot of things to stay active there, right? And especially the good weather compared to what we're dealing with.
Yeah, it is.
Today, actually, my husband and I went on a nice hike and put down a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. And yeah, so that was our little activity we did today. And we love running the beach and swimming and working out and surfing. Anything we can come up with, playing tennis.
And, G, what stuff did you enjoy when you're out there? What types of things?
Well, when I was in Kauai, I mean, to me, I've been to a lot of places. To me, it's the most beautiful place I've ever been, and I've been to a lot of really cool places. And you know, the most inspiring thing for me is just taking the helicopter ride and actually seeing the whole island and how breathtaking. And my wife and I, we made the commitment that next time we go, we're going to go hike around where the cliff side is. I think that's on the east side of the island. And I'm definitely going to have to go surf, sounds like.
You got to get out there.
I don't know if there's any Bonner there. That was one of the things that freaked me out in Kona. And I was like a piece of plywood laying on the board, and I was on a longboard. And I was like, oh. You know, so it was pretty challenging. But, I mean, it was so challenging for me. And then I was actually thinking about you. And, you know, and it's amazing how I was thinking about you, and this is true, is that, okay, if she can get up with one arm and the challenge that you were faced with, surely I'm able to get up. And I couldn't even get up, you know. So I was like, oh, my goodness. So I had a new appreciation for surfing. So to see the things that you've been able to do on a board, I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. Go ahead.
Learning in the right conditions is so essential, and like having sand bottom makes it so much better. So you're not like scared to fall off the board. You can just touch the sand if you fall off. But yeah, it is one of the hardest sports in the world to learn, I must say.
I don't think I'll be doing it anytime soon, being 6'10", and that's definitely not my sport. Former professional wrestler, college basketball player, but coordination like that, it's amazing. I can, and GJ told me the story of when he did surf out there and the dangers of surfing in Hawaii. So you're definitely an unbelievable athlete in so many aspects. From that tragedy, what made you really want to write the book? Because again, sharing what's happened to you, a lot of times people, you say, hey, I'm just going to keep focusing on my career of professional surfing. But what made you say, hey, I want to write this book?
I felt the desire to just share how I overcame and also just like what I went through and how God was a huge role in my life and how my family teamed up and just encouraged me, because all of us like face different times in our lives that are challenging or just trials or just something just plain right awful, and it can set people back. And so I just felt a desire just to share how we got through it, and just we knew that we had been given a unique life and a unique story, and that it was something worth sharing.
We're talking to Bethany Hamilton, a professional surfer with the tremendous story, the book, then the movie. And as GJ shared, her unbelievable rise to fame as a great role model for girls. And GJ, so interesting to hear the story and hear that she wants to share and also express her faith.
Yeah, well, I'm just so amazed how God has definitely touched your life and how you've embraced every aspect of your life and sharing your story. And one of the things that I teach is, everybody has a story. Share your story, and somebody's able to identify with it. And here in my very own home, a 9-year-old girl is able to identify with different aspects of your own story in your life, and it's an inspiration. And what's amazing, you haven't just written one book, you've written a whole bunch of books. And I realized one of the gifts I'm going to get my daughter, I'm going to get her, Rise Above 90 Day Devotional,
awesome.
So I think that's
I'm actually really excited. I'm working on another book right now. Bethany Hamilton, Body and Soul. It's actually for young girls and encouraging them in healthy lifestyle and being active and choosing the right foods. And I'm super passionate about that. So it'll be fun to see how girls receive it and change some lives for better choice making as they grow up into women. And it's been a lot of fun.
Well, just keep writing, keep sharing, and I'm an author as well, so I know what it's like to put that together, and the amount of work that goes in there, and then being vulnerable of putting it out to the public, and you've done it on more than one occasion already, and when you get your next book, completed, we'll have you on the show, and you can talk about that. And for those that are listening, you can go to BethanyHamilton.com and learn more about Bethany and everything that she's doing and her books. And obviously, you've got a foundation that you started, and I saw some of the video clips, and that's inspiring as well. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your foundation?
Yeah, Friends of Bethany is my foundation, and its focus is reaching out to amputees and shark attack victims. And this summer we did our first ever girls retreat, and we had about 11 girls come out to Southern California and just had them hang out for the weekend and taught them how to surf. And I must say, every single girl got up and rode a wave all the way to the beach, and some of them are missing a leg, and a lot of them are missing an arm or more than one arm, or both arms. And it was just amazingly beautiful just to love on them and remind them that this doesn't have to set them back in life, and just share the love of God and just have a fun time of relating to each other. And so that was a cool step that my foundation has done, and it's just awesome to be able to give back to that community that is really rather neglected, and just be a hint of hope. And so it's been fun to see how that's evolved, and just growing my personal interest in giving back more to the community of people who lose their limb and are struggling with that.
Absolutely. And another thing that must make you excited is about the filming of Dolphin Tale 2. Tell us about what's been happening there.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of I've kind of had a cameo role in Dolphin Tale 2. And it was amazing. I got to go down to the set Well, in the first few days of filming, I got to swim with Winter, the dolphin who lost her tail, and they made a prosthetic tail for her, and all these, it's a really cute, like, kids film. I mean, even adults can enjoy it, I'd say, but yeah, it was pretty awesome. Like, Morgan Freeman's in the film, and I'm a big fan of him. He's one of my favorite male actors, so I was, like, all excited. I'm like, oh, Morgan's in the movie. And so it was a lot of fun, though, just working with dolphins and filming another positive kids film. So had a lot of fun with that. And dolphins are just amazing creatures. I really enjoyed just seeing them do their thing in the water and seeing them get happy and do their little dolphin noises and stuff.
A lot of fun things coming up for Bethany Hamilton, right, G? It sounds like it.
Yeah, well, I'm just sitting here and I had goosebumps here or God bumps, and I'm just thinking, I said, how one circumstance has turned into such a powerful story and how it's having so much impact both on yourself and you know, at one point you're thinking, laying in bed and thinking, you know, am I going to be able to surf again? To now you're hanging out with Morgan Freeman and you know, yeah, everybody loves Morgan Freeman. I mean, he's definitely a true icon and a great actor and definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So do you have any plans to do any more acting or is it just, you know?
If a fun thing like Dolphin Tale 2 came along, maybe, but honestly, I'm not an actor. I like to be the athlete and just give back. But it was a fun experience, and I'm excited for the film to come out. And definitely don't think I'll invest too much into acting, though.
You see yourself continuing your professional surfing career and really transforming people's lives, especially girls' lives, living healthy, active lives with your, especially teaming up with Tampax. So, Bethany, where can we find information on you, learn more about you, and also for our listeners out there that want to continue to follow what you're doing with Tampax and all the other cool things you're doing?
Yeah, well, you can check out my website, BethanyHamilton.com, and then I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Bethany Hamilton. And for more information about the awesomely active things going on with Tampax, you can go to their Facebook page. It's just Facebook.com/Tampax. And, just share your story of how you like to be active and I'm taking over their Instagram page tomorrow, so that will be a lot of fun. And yeah, keep following everything that all those girls are up to.
Well, best of luck, Bethany, and definitely I'm going to make sure my daughter Ava gets to see the film and my girls, because we have not yet, and we're going to make sure that happens very, very soon. So thanks again for calling, and best of luck to you. And GJ, if you have anything else to say, but what a great guest again we've had, right?
Great guest, very inspiring, and just keep doing what you're doing, and look forward to you know, getting your books, and we'll definitely have to make sure you get one of my books, and let's
awesome.
Let's stay in touch, and let's see how we can help each other, and again, you get another book or anything else you need to talk about, you know, we got a new friend now, so thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, DJ.
All right, take care. All right, see you later, Bethany.
Bye from me.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook for the Beach Lifestyle, a Simply G Media Celebrity segment. And I want to welcome my co-host, Jarrett. Jarrett, you've joined me for another one, but again, this is education-related, so I said I had to call you. How are you, Jarrett?
I'm doing wonderful, Neil. Can't wait to get started and really find out some terrific information.
Well, absolutely. And the guy that we're about to introduce, again, former professional wrestler just like myself, but former WCW champion, was a mainstay in the WWF for so many years. But now he's here to really raise awareness of bullying. So I want to welcome the program, Celebrity Mark Miro. Mark, thanks for calling.
Neil, Jared, thank you guys for having me on your show today.
Well, absolutely. It's fantastic that you're on, and I'm excited to talk to you. And again, I remember watching your career when I was working the indies and stuff and all the different gimmicks you did and all these things. But I'm so happy to hear that the great things that you're doing in the community to help others and really raise awareness, especially of this bullying. This is just becoming just ridiculous what's happening in the schools, right, Mark?
it's really sad, Neil. You know, I'm screaming from the rooftops. We are losing our next generation if more is not done in our schools around the country. We are seeing so many kids that are going through isolation, loneliness, depression, being bullied or abused, which leads to burning, cutting, and worst case, suicidal thoughts, and of course, suicide, which is now the third leading cause of death amongst young people today. It's a scary time for our young people, I started this program 7 years ago because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to try my best to do something about it and help, you know, change and save as many students as I possibly can.
And that's so great. And Jared, we talk about this when we bring celebrities on and athletes on, that literally they want to give back. They've had a successful life and they want to see how they help others, Jared.
And it's terrific when we do see that. And the question I have for Mark is, you know, at what point in your career, Mark, did you begin to recognize this as an area that you felt that you could make a difference in?
Well, you know, Jared, there's two types of people. There's people that say something needs to be done, and then there's a person that says, I want to go out and do something. I think I sat back so many years of my life watching things happen that I would say, something needs to be done about this, something needs to be done about that. And when I finally got to the point in my life where I said, you know what, I want to be a guy that goes out there and does something, and I want to make a difference, and I so understood and see the nature of what young people are going through today that I realized that I can make a difference by sharing my story with these young people and putting together programs at school where we have the top anti-bullying program, suicide prevention, substance abuse, and goal-setting programs within our schools today. And we're on pace to do about 200 presentations this year. I mean, it almost feels like I'm back in the wrestling industry the way we used to travel before. And it's just, but now it's for such a greater cause in my life, and I've never felt more of a purpose for living and waking up every day and realizing that you know, we can all make a difference if we just stop making excuses and we go out there and try and make a difference.
Mark, that's so important, and you're right. When you truly have a passion, a purpose in life, just to go and do a greater thing and to help others, it just makes you so passionate. So traveling all over the country, it's not like when you were in the wrestling business where it's just like constantly this grind draining you. You know every time you're ready to go because you know you're helping others. And I got to commend you for that. But really I wanted to know specifically, tell us a little bit about the campaign. How do you help out the schools when you go in and do talks?
Oh, sure. This is where it's really, you know, first of all, when you walk out there, we walk out to anywhere from 500 to 4,000 students at a time. We do, you know, full school assemblies, gymnasiums, and they're huge. We have our own tour bus where we come and we set up our own speakers, our screens, everything. And, you know, coming from the World Wrestling Federation, you know, you have that entertainment background where you've got to make it bigger than life, you know, when you put these assemblies together, because you've got to captivate and entertain students. You can't walk out there and start spewing, you know, statistics to kids. They could care less about statistics. But you go out there and put on an entertaining presentation. But we really found by touching the student's heart is how you change their mind. And we utilize stories of young people that have taken their life, because many kids that hurt other kids don't realize what students go through. They don't know if their parents are going through a divorce, or there's been a death in the family, or they're struggling with addictions or eating disorders or whatever, and they tell a student how ugly, stupid, and worthless they are, and the kid feels hopeless, and many times it leads to, you know, self-harming or, worst case, suicidal thoughts and taking their own lives. And I've been to so many funerals now of young people who have taken their life, and the one thing that I see funerals is the parents. I get to meet the parents, and many of the parents I become very good friends with, and they say to me, they say, Mark, if I only knew, if he or she only would have told me, I would have saved my child's life. But, you know, and that's what we do in our programs, is we get kids to open up and talk about the adversity they're going through. And we often see, you know, after we do a school, I receive hundreds of letters from students on how it changed or even saved their life. It got them to open up to their parents or talk to a counselor or to reach out and talk to someone about addictions or cutting or self-harming or whatever they're going through. And that's where we're seeing the difference in our programs.
And being able to reach the youth, Jared, that's the key thing. And what Mark's able to do is talk to the kids. And kids have so much to share, and Jarrett and I, all as educators, know the way we're going to find out what's wrong with our students and how they need our help is by talking to them. Right, Jarrett?
Well, right, and again, finding out what the young people identify with, not going in there with a lecture or something that comes off as another adult coming into their lives and telling the young people right and wrong, reaching them on their level. And what I really appreciated what Mark said that he is addressing with the young people that he's speaking with is he's reaching out to the actors in these presentations, the people that are putting forth the abuse, but he's also reaching out to the people that are experiencing it, the young people that might feel totally alone, and letting them know that not only aren't they alone, but he's showing them options that they have.
Jerry Neal, you are so right. As educators, you guys can appreciate and understand that, you know. And, you know, that's the most important thing, is to get these kids to realize that they're not alone. There's a lot of kids that are going through this adversity. But if you hold it inside, you know, I often compare it to like a volcano when a student holds something inside, especially if they're being bullied or abused in some way. And sooner or later, because I've been doing this a long time, I see that volcano eventually erupt. And many times it erupts in negative behavior, alcohol, drugs, being promiscuous, hurting, bullying, or another student because of maybe the pain that you're going through, not that that makes it right, but it also leads to the burning, the cutting, and, of course, the suicidal thoughts. But to get kids to open up and talk about their adversity is the most important thing, where they feel that they're not alone. They feel that there is hope. They feel that there is someone that cares. Because when I'm at these funerals, the one thing that the kid left in the suicide note is that nobody's going to miss me. Nobody's going to care if I'm not here. And they're so wrong. These kids were so loved. They never really understand how much they are loved. And that's why when I do my night presentations for the families, for the parents to come back from, you know, to the evening shows, we talk about that and how important it is for you to make sure you always let your kid know how much you love them and try not to lecture them about their problems. They want to feel like they can talk to you about that. And I often talk to students when they feel like, I can't talk to my parent about that. I often say, think about if you had a child. Wouldn't you want them to come to you and tell you about them cutting themselves, them feeling like they don't want to be here no more? You'd be like, devastated if they didn't tell you. And I want you to think about your parents and how they would feel. And it really gets kids to start thinking and looking outside the box of just being in their own world, in their own cubicle where nobody cares, nobody's going to matter, or nothing's going to ever happen good for me. And I give these kids hope, and that's why we have a goal-setting program where we talk to kids about what they want to do when they get older. You know, what are their goals and dreams? What do they enjoy? What is their passion? You know, they often say when you find your passion, you never have to work.
Yes.
And I guess I found my passion because I love what I do. Every morning I can't wait to wake up and go to another school, a corporation, another church, another presentation, another opportunity to make a difference in this world. You know, the more we give, the more we get back in our own lives. And I've never realized it as much as until I started doing this.
We're talking to Mark Mero, former WCW heavyweight champion plus WWF superstar, and now turned anti-bullying, helping in so many different ways, kids and teenagers and seeing specific things. Mark, one thing I liked what you talked about, your program, and you know how you're always there to visit, and you're feeling bad about when kids end up committing suicide. You want to work with the parent because the parent is the key to that child. And if you're not educating the parents, the kids are not going to make those changes. And I think that's key that what you do in your program.
Neal, you are so right. You know, I often tell people, you know, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. It matters who's in your house. We have got to start taking control. You know, our parents have just let the boundaries out too far. And kids really want boundaries as much. You know, I get all the letters. The reason why we structured our programs, we structured around the letters that we get. The kids are talking to us about what they want. And kids really want boundaries. They want to have relationships with their parents. You know, I often go to dinner with my wife, and we're out at dinner. And just a couple weeks ago, we were at like an Outback Steakhouse, I think it was. And there was a big round table next to us. And it was a parent with five children. And all of them were on their cell phones. A couple of kids had earplugs in. And the parents even word on their phones texting. I'm thinking to my wife, I go, this is a night out with the family. What has happened to our families in this country? where we feel we can't even talk to each other anymore. We feel we don't even have those relationships. And oftentimes a parent is a single parent now. And I think that's where kids relate to my story. My dad left when I was 8 years old, and my mom worked two jobs. And they could really relate to me growing up, having dreams and goals and wanting to make something of my life and then making it to the pinnacle of professional sports entertainment, but then blowing it all because of bad choices, drugs, alcohol, you know, doing stupid things in life, just basically making bad choices. And then realizing, you know, that the only way I'm going to make it or ever be really happy in life, and happiness is a choice, is to start making those good choices. Now, those bad choices became learning experiences, and I try to share those with other kids that they don't have to go through those things that I went through.
So true. And, Jarrett, we talk about this when any of these professional athletes come on. Kids listen. Parents listen because they have gone through it. And and it just really helps the kids understand this, right, Jarrett?
Neil, just perfectly stated, and I love what Mark said. During our interviews with the athletes that are giving back to the community, I'm always struck by how each week an athlete says something that sounds so simple but is so profound. And I like what Mark said. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. It matters who's in your house. And there was, again, just a wonderful statement that said so much with a few words. Mark, when you're speaking with the adults, Neil and I in our work and during our interviews, we have sometimes found it surprising and are struck by the number of adults that think that bullying is just not a big deal. It's not any different than it was 50 years ago, and it may not be. It might be just as serious as it was 50 years ago, but the results, the outcomes seem to be so different today with young people. How do you help adults recognize, school teachers, principals, parents, how do you help them see that this is serious? The kids don't always bounce back from this.
Well, first of all, we in Orange County here in Orlando area, they just had a statistic that came out that just shocked everybody. They interviewed all the kids in Orange County, and 8% of the students in Orange County, Florida, which is one of our largest counties out here, 8% of the students said that they have attempted suicide. Huh. Not thought about it, attempted suicide. How scary is that thought? You know, Jarrett, when we were in high school, I'm sure I'm older than you guys, but we were in high school, you know, we never see a kid that was cutting themselves or burning themselves or I didn't know any kids that wanted to kill themselves.
No, no.
You know, back then you kind of knew who the school bully was, or, you know, you got to stay away from that guy or that girl or whatever it was. But today, you know, the problem is that, you know, with social media, we can wake up in the morning now, the kids wake up in the morning now and they get ready for school and they get on their social media and they read how ugly, stupid, and worthless they are. It isn't just when you're at school. It can be 24/7. And sometimes you don't even know who's doing the bullying. These kids have these fake accounts, and they just constantly belittle you and just badger you over and over and over again, where you feel, you start, you know, perception becomes a reality, and you start believing this hype. Maybe I'm not pretty. Maybe I really am ugly. Maybe I am fat and ugly and stupid and worthless, and you start believing this. And that's what happens with these kids, is that they start hurting themselves. And, you know, bullying, when they say, well, yeah, we had bullying when we were a kid. You know, we call each other names, and we still have that today. But it's nothing compared to when I was a kid. I meet with these kids. I see the pain on these kids' faces. I have met with the parents that have lost a loved one, you know, through suicide. I see the pain, and I never experienced that when I was younger. Most kids today either know someone that committed suicide or they know someone that knows someone that committed suicide. I never knew anybody that committed suicide when I was a kid.
Me either. And that's scary. And Mark, it's something I know. One of the things that you talk about is your importance of your faith in this whole thing. You're looking at, ultimately, you're doing this, you have a purpose in life, and that you, after reforming yourself, overcoming alcohol and drugs, making the wrong choices when you were in the WWF and WCW, and changing your life and transforming it, you see your faith as an important part of this, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, in schools, I can't talk about my faith in Jesus Christ. But, you know, I got to tell you something. If someone speaks to me more than 5 minutes, they know who I belong to. And I do it because of my faith in God. And I just can't talk about that in school. It's really sad that we're at a place in our country where, you know, you could actually, you know, grab your cell phone and download and look at pornography, but we can't put a nativity scene in a public park.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely crazy what is happening in our country today. And but you know what? Here's the thing is that I want to be a light in darkness. Our greatest, if I could say this, my greatest mission field is our public schools. I really believe that.
I agree too.
And I'm going to do everything I can for as long as I live to do the best job I possibly can, because you know, it's about who I represent. And even though I can't say his name, I'm going to live my life for him.
Well, and that's great, especially the Christian radio stations that we have this show on, Mark, and I'm just so pleased that you're bringing this out, because my faith's so important to me, and I tell Jared all the time this, and when I read up on you, and I said, I learned about your conversion, and I'm very passionate also of what's happened in professional wrestling. The way wrestling's changed to when you were in WCW, to the way it became, has become now, and how it's just not great role models, different things, and it's fantastic to hear your transformation and your challenges. And Jared, I'm sure you're impressed by Mark, aren't you?
Of course I am. You know, again, we're meeting someone who is not defined by the sport that they represent. They're defined by, you know, something that is much higher and much, much greater.
Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate that. You know, you know, when I talk to a radio show, unless they obviously tell me it's a Christian show, you know, you got to be very careful when I go to schools, because you can't talk. You say you're better off swearing, and they'll forgive you for swearing. But if you say the word Jesus Christ at a public school, you will not be invited back to that school. And word will spread very quickly that he's out there trying to preach to our kids, because it takes one person that's maybe an atheist or a different faith to, you know, petition the school board, and they'll make sure that you'll never come back. And the Bible says, be wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove, and I really try to do that.
Well, Mark, I wanted to bring up your faith because I knew that this is a great story, a fantastic story.
And you want to see me happy, you start talking about my favorite subject, and that's Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Mark, where can we learn more about you? Our listeners out there can follow you and see if they'd like to get your program in their school. Where can we find it?
Yeah, you know, we go up to New York a few times a year. We've never been out to the you guys are in Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh,
right?
But we're syndicated on 100+ stations, so we're talking to the world right now.
Please. Well, first of all, I want to give out our offices are in Orlando, Florida, and we travel all over the country. Our phone number is 407-862-4800, 407-862-4800. And you can also, anyone follow me on Twitter or Facebook, I'm Mark is with a C, it's Mark Mero, M-E-R-O, so I'm at Mark Mero, and Facebook, I have my own page, which is Mark Mero Page. And, of course, our website, which is ThinkPoz, P-O-Z as in zebra, thinkpoz.org, and you can find me on any of those places. I would love to hear from folks that maybe hear this show, and I'm certainly like to reach out to them, and please call me or contact me.
Well, Mark, I hope to have you back on the show in a couple months to talk more about specific things, especially I am here for you. I'm going to help you out. We maybe need to have a conversation off air at one point and see how, with my education connections, how we can work together to really eliminate bullying. So thanks for calling, Mark, and we'll stay in touch.
Really enjoyed talking to you guys. God bless you, and thank you so much for what you guys are doing.
All right, God bless, Mark. Take care. All right, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Tutor Show, powered by the Simply G Media Network Celebrity Segment. Again, go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And for my Pittsburgh affiliates, you guys got to be really excited to have this guy back on. And I wonder, last time he's talked to the Pittsburgh media before, but I want to welcome the program, Mike LaValliere, Golden Glove winner, Pittsburgh Pirate, and much, much more, a.k.a. Spanky. Mike, thanks for calling, man.
Neil, it's my pleasure to get a chance to speak with everybody.
Well, absolutely, Mike. It's just the memories of the Pirates of that time, and our second segment, we're going to kind of rehash and talk a little bit about how great it's to see the Pirates, the resurgence of the Pirates, and I'm sure that makes you happy as well to see the Pirates after so many years of having down times.
You know, Neil, even though I played with four teams, the Phillies signed me. I played with the Cardinals, then get traded to the Pirates and the White Sox. But, whenever I look back at my career, I kind of identify myself as a Pirate. And I've moved here to Bradenton, the spring home of the Pittsburgh Pirates, and ended up coaching with them in spring training, this past year, and working with the catchers. So, I have to look back at it, and even though I was a Cardinal, I was rooting a little bit harder for the Buckeyes.
Well, that's good. You're definitely getting some brownie points. So let's talk about, Mike, how you got discovered to get into the major leagues. Did you always think you were going to be a major leaguer, first of all? Did you think?
Well, to tell you the truth, back in high school, I was probably a better hockey player than I was a baseball player. I grew up in Manchester, New Hampshire, and had an opportunity to go up to play in the Junior A League as a high schooler, and chose not to because I would have had to quit baseball. So, for a time there, it was, my first love was hockey. And, I really thought that's if I was going to ever make it to, someplace, it was going to be in that sport. I ended up, it worked out for the best, obviously, and I got a couple of breaks and, took advantage whenever I had the chance.
Absolutely, and it's a situation. So you kind of got involved in baseball and stuff like that. When did someone discover you to kind of get that opportunity to be in baseball, or was it someone saying, you got to change sports for sure?
Well, I tell you one thing, Neil. I went to college up in New England also, and at the time, back in the early '80s, late '70s, there wasn't a whole lot of guys coming out of there, to play baseball. And in the draft of 1981, I believe there was 57 rounds, and at the time, 28 teams possibly, and not one of them thought that I was good enough to play. And I ended up signing as a free agent. I was playing in the Cape Cod League. I still wanted to play. And, I was having a fabulous time there. And, I enjoyed school. And, I was just, going to see if possibly somebody, I could change somebody's mind, maybe my senior year. And ended up having a good hot streak whenever there was a Philadelphia Phillies scout in town scouting us in the Cape League. And he ended up taking a liking to me, and watched a couple games. I ended up going, in the two games, 8 for 9 with a homer and a couple of doubles, some RBIs, some good defensive plays at third base, and he signed me right then and there, and that's where it all started.
Wow. It must be amazing to have that opportunity and say, oh my gosh, now I'm signed. Who would have thought I would be playing baseball? And so you're in the minor leagues. And once you're in the minor leagues, did you feel that you were going to get up to the majors quickly?
Well, my first spring training, they had told me that I was going to be, they were going to make me a catcher. And hadn't caught before, but kind of saw the writing on the wall at the time, especially in the early 80s. They got a guy named Mike Schmidt that was playing third base from Philly. And I figured, maybe beating him out wasn't probably the easiest thing to do. So I went right along with it. And, I had a couple of great guys, Rolly DeArmas, who's still with the Phillies organization, and P.J. Carey. These two guys working with me in spring training. They taught me the right way to do things. And it was just, I get some great coaching. I knew I had to push hard to make myself better, but I knew there was no chance I was going to make it to the big leagues as a third baseman. So moving to catcher was the right thing to do, and it all worked out for the best.
And definitely worked out for the best. So when did you know you were finally going up to the majors? What did, getting the call, was that awesome?
Well, it was, I remember, started off the year, and it was kind of a weird year in 1984. I had started off the year by getting married, so we'll start with the real weirdness. Just kidding. We'll be celebrating my wife and I our 30th.
Congratulations! That's great.
This upcoming February, but I went to spring training. Was intent on making it to the AAA team, and ended up having a trade or two right at the end of the spring, and I got bumped back to AA. And I remember in the locker room, the minor league coordinator with the Phillies, Jim Ballmer, kind of sat me down and said, "Hey, look, we really like you. We got a spot for you in the coach's room next year. Just go out and have a good year." So according to the Phillies, I was pretty much done, and they wanted to make me a coach. Well, I went back to AA. I was a backup catcher again. Ended up a couple guys got hurt, probably about 8 guys got hurt.
Wow.
Ended up going to AAA. Their guy, the starter in AA, they didn't feel he was ready, and I was, so I get up there and had an opportunity to catch every day for a month and a half, and really had a great month and a half. And Lee Elia was the manager in Portland. I was playing out in the Pacific Coast League, and I don't know exact the date, but it was right around October or August 28th, last week of August, and he calls me into his office, and I'm thinking, man, I've been behaving, I'm having a good year. What's he, is he going to chew me out for something? And so he sets me down and says, Spank, you're getting called up in September. And that was obviously pretty amazing. And I ended up getting called up in September, and just for the basic warm up some pitchers and drink some big league coffee.
So when you get to Philadelphia, I have to jump back, because when you brought up Spanky, and I'm sure you were excited that I remembered that and brought that up, because again, it just brings back memories. Who gave you that nickname?
Well, actually, Jim Fregosi. He was my manager in AAA with the Cardinals. And actually, when Lee Elia called me in, my nickname with the Phillies was Bulldog. And so he called me Doggy. And so the next year, I end up getting traded to the Cardinals. And Fregosi looked at me and said, "Spanky." And I said, "Well, what's up?" He goes, "You look just like the Little Rascals character." And I says, "Well, what if I don't like it?" He goes, "Well, yeah, tough luck, kid. That's the one that's going to stick." And that's the one that ended up sticking.
It definitely ended up sticking. So you played with the Phillies for how many years?
I was with them from 81 until 1984. Then went over to the Cardinals for 85 and 86. And then started my career with the Pirates in 87.
And that's what I really want to go to, is the Pirates. You had a feeling I would go there. Those years in the Cardinals. So you were you a platoon player with the Cardinals?
Actually, I started off the year as the backup catcher in 1986. They traded for Mike Heath, and Heathy was the starter. And, things didn't work out for him. And about the middle of June, I was took over, and I was the everyday catcher in St. Louis in 86, and ended up playing, 110 games that year as a rookie.
Okay, so when you finally ended up with the Pirates, were you excited about going to this organization? Did you know a lot about the organization and its tradition and everything when you got the call up?
Tell you the truth, Neil, we were in last week a spring training with the Cardinals, and there was a B game early that morning, and there was only 2 catchers in camp because it's the very end. It was Steve Lake and myself, and Steve had caught 9 innings of the morning game, and so I'm getting ready for the afternoon game, the 1 o'clock game, and out in the outfield and doing my jogs and getting loosened up. And Dave Ricketts, the coach of the catching coach with the Cardinals, comes in and says, "You're not playing." And I said, well, what's going on? I'm fine. He goes, you're not playing. That's all he told me. And then he grabbed Van Slyke, and he says, you're not playing, Andy. And so right then and there, it was kind of like, all right, what's up? And then they said, well, yes. And I go, well, who's going to catch? Well, Steve Lake. So here's a guy who's going to have to catch a doubleheader in spring training, which is, you know, a lot of guys don't catch doubleheaders
right.
during the season, never mind spring training. So right then and there, I knew that I was traded. And so Andy and I talked to each other during the game, and we figured, you know what? There's only two places where we really didn't want to go. We didn't want to go to Montreal because of the hassles of going through customs, you know, in and out of the country. And we didn't want to go to Pittsburgh because they had lost 100 games like 4 years in a row. And, you know, things were just really not very good. initially, the trade was, it was someone, someone had killed my dog. You know, St. Louis, absolute fabulous organization, great city. And, you know, here I am going from one of the best situations in baseball to, at the time, one of the worst situations. But it went with an open mind. Jim Leland, the very first day, welcomes us into the locker room. And, he made an instant impression, right there. And I said, well, you know what? Playing for this guy, I don't know what else is going on. I didn't know anybody else on the team other than Andy. But, you know, if everything's like this guy, you know, things are going to be all right.
Well, absolutely, and getting to Pittsburgh and, again, a losing team. It kind of sounds like what we'll talk about for a couple minutes on this show because I'm so interested in the story, Mike, and when you come up with, what are we going to talk about? You see, it's like just you and I having a cup of coffee, learning about you and learning the background. I mean, the backup story, the background going to the Pirates. So once you get there, you're in almost the same boat as a lot of the Pittsburgh Pirates today that were winning. They were a terrible team. They were bottom feeders. I'm sure the crowds weren't very big at that time. But you went to, once you finally got to Pittsburgh, I'm sure you saw the tradition, right? You saw the
fans. Yeah. I mean, we had good group of guys, and you could see that there was talent, but we made mistakes. We made young mistakes, and, that was the one thing is, we held each other accountable, and that's the kind of team we had. We were close from the get-go, and, it was just kind of like everybody, had that goal of, number one, selfishly to stay in the big leagues, but number two, let's make something out of this. And, it was just, everything, the kids, the wives, the coaches. It really was a family. And, I think that was a big part of the development of our success there was, everybody cared about each other. And, that's a big part of it, knowing that you're not all out there by yourself. You get somebody that's got your back.
So you turned it around pretty quickly, right? I'm kind of, being a historian, going back and remembering. I remember 91, 92, 89. So you got to the Pirates in what year?
I got there in 87. And, that year, I think we finished 80 and 82. So we're just slightly under 500. And then 88, we contended for a while. But the Mets were just too good. And 89, we went into that season thinking, all right, this is it. This is time for us to, jump up and play with the big boys. And we had a rash of injuries early in the year. And Sid Bream went down with a knee injury and missed, three or four months. 2 days after he went down, I went down, had a play at the plate, and I missed 3 months. Vance Slyke, within 2 weeks, he hurt his back, and he ended up missing some significant time. So, 89 was kind of a, we'll call it a mulligan. where, you know, a lot of promise to start with, and, you know, just, you know, didn't keep the horses on the track. And, you know, going into 90, you know, we knew that, you know, we still had the right pieces and we're all healthy. And that's really, you know, when things started to gel.
All right.